Today is July 22, 1993. This is Margaret Van Cleve. I will be interviewing Joseph Flackney, a graduate of the University of Alaska in 1934. Yesterday, he received an honorary doctorate from the university for his distinguished service to Alaska and longtime support of the University of Alaska. We are recording in the sound studio in the Rasmussen Library at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. You first came to Alaska in 1929 to attend the University of Alaska, known then as Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. Your experiences could fill several tapes, I'm sure, but let's focus on your involvement in the statehood movement. What influenced you to support statehood?
Well, Alaska was different than most places in that men were, and women were prizes as were children, because the loneliness of men and women, so they were good in providing money for schools and stuff. But the thing that got me was that I found that Alaska's mentally ill were sent to Morningside, and I kept hearing the word morning is inside, outside, and Morningside. Now, this was a person of the mentally ill sent there, started because when the United States purchased Alaska, that was it. They did nothing. And then some Americans got to Sitka, and they did things that annoyed the natives. And it took a Canadian gunship to go in and rescue the Americans. That brought the nation up to thinking of what to do with the mentally ill. And so the part that they did is they appointed four sheriffs over the four districts in Alaska. Now, each one was alone. Now, there were incidences, you know, and this is what the thing was, that if there were three people on a creek that got cabin happy because of that, and they'd gang up on another and claimed him crazy, then the marshal would come and he'd have to arrest him. And then, but there was no place to go for it, and it was just a crazy thing. The marshals might have them for months in some kind of log cabin or something, till they got the authorization to take them to the States. So this was a bad thing for everyone. And then when they did go out with some, there was no place that wanted to take Alaska's mentally ill, but they found a man who had the drink tank where drunken sailors could go and clear it up. He took this group, and that was the care of them. Now, as for any regulations as to how they were and to medical stuff, it was just nil. Mm-hmm. And it led to something so terrible. Rudy, you wouldn't think that in that beautiful area between Portland and Seattle, because this man got going and saw he had something, he pulled the politics on it. And so he got a law passed that Alaska's mentally ill, the Interior Department, could not contract with anyone except within the certain area, and that would be west of the Cascades, north of Seattle, and south of Portland. No other place in the United States, by law, could they go. So this man that got the contract and built it up into a wonderful farm.
Who was the man? Do you remember his name?
No, I do not.
But he thought he had a good thing going for his pocketbook.
Yeah. Well, by the time I got it would have been within the family. But it was so successful, and it but successful for him, but not for anyone. But when I was sent to Washington, D.C., to work for statehood, and among the things, responsibility for things dealing with the people of the interior. So when I learned that the Morningside came under my jurisdiction, I looked at it and I saw that we did. And so I went to the Director of Office and Territories and asked him, why do we in the Interior Department does not have a single doctor run an institute of that kind? He didn't know. Well, let's go and see the secretary. We went up to see the secretary, and it was at that time, I'd been there for a while, building on up and forward.
This is in 1946?
Yes.
When you were Chief Alaska Division?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It had been a few months that went by before I realized this.
Yeah.
And I'd been and visited the home and began to see how it was. And so then asking, feeling that something should be done, and I want the answer, how come an agency that doesn't have a doctor at all have a say on an organization like that? Well, saw the Secretary Chapman, and he didn't know. Go and see Dr. Perrin of the Health Department. So I went over to see Perrin of the Health Department about them taking it over. And he said, no, Interior Department asked for it, and they got it. And he says, now, what I can do, I can help you. If the secretary will write a letter to me that when our troops, our investigators on the West Coast were going up at a request from the secretary, they could go in and study this facility. So that was agreed to. He would go that far. So he started a team that came up. This would be a U.S. team studying mentally ill facilities. Mm-hmm. Then on this side, Dr. Albright had gotten far enough along. I think he headed up the territorial section at that time. And from the state side, we came up and said that something should be done about this thing.
But this is because Alaska was a territory.
Because Alaska was a territory, and as such, we had no authority. You see, the Secretary of the Interior or the Congress of the United States had to say we didn't have a vote in the Congress of the United States. We had a delegate there, but he had no vote. See.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, then this man had developed. He saw what he had. He developed that political thing. Got it passed by law, so the law is that the Secretary of Interior could not contract for the mentally ill except for that very limited area, so no competition. So this man went on. So then the only doctor on the place was a doctor representing the Interior Department. But while he was a nice person, he was weak. He really was a cast-off from the Veterans Administration. He was good, but he was weak and didn't enforce it. So I saw this thing and went back, and it was the thing. And two, three trips, a few months apart, the same thing. And I got there, and all of the men were in one Quonset hut type of a place, and all of the women another. No separation for tuberculosis or anything, and tuberculosis was so, well, it was the main diet in the Alaska Native people, see. So that right off the bat, that's what I began talking about. So we introduced legislation every year to correct that. But his political clout was such that it come to Congress and they would, the people from the states around would come and they had the wrong, and no, We could not have any institution in Alaska because mentally ill should be forced into American Siberia. No, this was, so year after year, we went to Congress to correct this here.
Mm-hmm. But how many years?
Well, that would have been until we got statehood.
So starting in 1946?
Yeah, and it had gone a long time before I came into it.
Mm-hmm.
It had gone to, when the marshals got their first people and came out and find how could they get rid of them, it was only to that man that handled dunk stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they came up, and I'm going to lead into in something there, I went and I saw our doctor, and then I learned and followed through. Never once that he did he have a registered a graduate doctor of medicine in there. Never once did he have a registered nurse. They were clothed rights that when Congress would come in there, because he'd use them and he built up this fruit area and fine herd of cattle and everything else. It was run well, but our natives were like slaves, and they were actually living on the culls. There was plenty of food. That was the thing. But he was making big money under this, and of course wasn't doing anything because you shouldn't have the tuberculosis and all the others together.
So it was the mentally ill and the tuberculosis?
Well, they were mentally ill. They were sent outside, but they had tuberculosis. The big percentage of them had tuberculosis. So then this went on, and we tried to correct it. Congress was agreeable. But since they'd come from each constituent, oh no, they can't do this to the Alaska's people, naturally they didn't have to vote for it. It wasn't their constituents. They believed we were right and agreed, but none of them had the spunk to go ahead with this. Well, this became very vicious. And one thing that I don't know to this day, but it really should be researched. But I came there on one of my trips to see our doctor and see what was going on. As I entered the main part of the building, you know, I saw a woman in white, like a nurse, go into a bathroom that was right on the side, and she turned on the water and placed a baby in there. When I came out, the steam was just coming out, and I took that baby out of the scalding water, and I believe maybe the baby lived. But a thing that I don't know to this day, was this the way that they handled when a pregnant native girl came in there? Because there's nowhere for a baby or a mother to take care of the children. So maybe as a part of the whole nasty deal, I don't know this, but I believe it's the case that since there were births in there of these poor native girls that came on in habit, I think maybe they used that system and never reported a thing on it. No, this is right now. And even with that, then we had cases And one year we had it pretty well rigged up to go. This is before statehood. And then when it came on up, he had enough clout that an army of women from California came there and opposed it because they know no Alaska natives could not be put in Alaska's Siberia. And they listened to any. And 2 years it was this flock of women from California, the Alaska that believed in the, you know, they listened to it. Because if you saw visits at the farm, well, he made money head over heels, because in that area he got every kind of fruit and take he had, and dairy cut. He had the finest herd of Holstein cattle that one would want, you see. So when you came in there, it looks like when Congress visited, you know, he could point out all of this stuff and the people working.
Showcase.
Yeah, but he never took them into the bunkhouse that they had or anything else. But they could see it, you know, it looked like.
The government money paid him for that.
Oh, the government had to pay for forestry. It was a contract, but he was making money using them as slave labor. And this is something that it seems impossible that could happen in that highly unionized area.
Mm-hmm. Now, this would be in Washington State.
Well, no, this is in the state of Washington, mm-hmm. that highly area of on the West Coast, mm-hmm. that was north of the river.
Columbia River.
It's Columbia and south of Seattle. Mm-hmm. You know, bringing it
in. Trying to pinpoint the area.
So
it's in the western part of the state.
Yeah, well, it's right the very western part of it. Mm-hmm. But it was restricted. You couldn't call for bids outside of that area, and that was the only one in that area, see, that had it.
Oh, really?
So he had it all made. Slave labor, handle of his with the minimum stuff. And as I say, I am certain what I'm saying here, that never once in that whole period did he have a graduate doctor in there. And neither did he have a registered nurse. They wore the clothing of it. Mm-hmm. But we found this. And our man, he was too weak to really push it and come on out. So, but that is what it is. But anyhow, we fought that. And it was only after statehood that we got it. And then Congress poured in the money, and we got a 500-bed Indian Service Hospital in Anchorage and a 400-bed one in Sitka for the natives' use. And then the Indian Service, then, when they were ready to go, then they didn't open them up and use them, because they couldn't get the doctors. They insisted on American doctors. And there were lots of European, after the war, there were a lot of those good professional people ready. But they kept it away. And I remember one Irish congressman, when this came up for him, he said, "Are you going to keep this going while good medical people, and then we end up taking the dregs?" That's what that Irishman said. But it went on, and no correction made until statehood. But when we got statehood, they came with the money for the houses, and we got it ready. But when we had them, then the Indian Service wouldn't track them, because they didn't have doctors to go in, and they insisted they must be American, U.S. doctors, when Europe was calling for a good medical, you know, they needed work and stuff. Mm-hmm. And industry was hiring, but we couldn't hire them, so we went along on that way. And one thing I know that I said, get them in there off the tundra and take care of them, at least in the dying days, let them be in there. And an Indian or a native person being there, at least bringing the water and carrying him in a bed. And it took a long time. Actually, we didn't get anything ahead. And as this was going on, the Navy had one cement block medical building at Sitka. And when we wanted to get it, and there was a golden, the gilded cage in Anchorage and other places, but the gilded cage was where they wanted to get money in place for children, you see. So with a Dr. Albright in there and the stuff we worked on into. But we had this one place. And bone tuberculosis was so terrible, but no one would take these youngsters with bone tuberculosis. They wouldn't, not even the Shriners weren't prepared to take those. See, the Shriners would take, but this is one thing that wouldn't take care of. So, this was a place for 50, But we put in 55 in there. And they began to get the care as best that we could with the facilities we had. And I believe the bone marrow stuff started by our doctor. Now, this is something worth saying. But anyhow, that doctor being so interested in this, he bought himself, I think it was a Sears Roebuck deep freeze. And so he began to reserve bone matters, you see, they could use in the surgery. Well, anyhow, the thing to me, having seen these crippled and cleaned up people, you know, it was just unbelievable that that was the stage these 55 kids were in. I come back a year or two later, and darn it, the door opened the door and they came running, three came. No, it was there, it's so far off from being right mm-hmm. and wrong. But anyhow, even with that, of course, we had the thing is because we had the authorization to use they turned stuff over to us because here again is a kind of a fluke in this stuff. The Bureau of the Budget that had to say, you know, on a lot of things, and because this is me, but it's the thing of being honest. They found out that when I came in and spoke for Alaska, that I knew my subject, I told them, and they realized that I wasn't cheating. So when the war ended, the head of the Bureau of the Budget that had to do with hospital stuff, they called me and they said, we have no one to handle surplus property. They had to find something. What would you think if we go to Congress and that authority to dispose of surplus property would be extended to the Secretary of the Interior, since he had most of the stuff, he had the road commission, the railroad, and of course over 92% of Alaska was within his scope. Well, I said to him, well, nothing could be better than that. And out of that simple thing of getting the hospitals and this thing for that, then that opened up the whole stretch. So this is how Alaska got so much of surplus property, because that disposal of it came under the office of the Secretary of Interior, but we had most of it. And of course, with Dr. Albright, the territorial man on the medicine, and then to Ike Taylor with the High Commission and the railroad and all of these big things where the money came in. This stuff began to come, you know, and everything else. But to the two big hospitals that the Indian Service had, no. And with the one at Anchorage, there was only that one concrete place. And they wanted to keep it for the cement buggies at night, locking them up while they had a lot of, hangar after hangar and build after. It was a Navy base. Mm-hmm. But that's the one fireproof thing that through the clout of the Golden Cage, Doc Albright and all of us together, we were able to keep the Indian Service. Out of that, we got our people into there, and the doctor that we got there, he was interested. And as I say, I believe that the understanding of bone marrow happened there because he put personal money into getting a deep freeze where he could save bone matters and stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, it turned out so good. Well, that is one phase of this whole medical thing that happened. But after Stato, then, we got the money and we began to get, and Congress was so liberal. And one thing that we asked for, the Bureau of the Budget and the Health Department went for it. And what we got was that we could build a unit to a hospital that these people could be treated in. See, they weren't putting, and the hospitals weren't prepared to take the tuberculosis people. So we got the authorization by law and monies when a hospital, so we got these out of the area, mentally disturbed people, instead of going into the crazy house, they were given a chance and tested with doctors and treatment. It probably was only the necessity was someone to care for them instead of going there. And so most of the people never did have to go to Morningside or anything else. It was just a few days or weeks in there with the care, proper care and the proper doctors and helping them, that they weren't mentally ill or anything else. It was probably for lack of food and other matters that just made them nervous, you see. Mm-hmm. And it was my
Are you talking about just the native people or were some of the white people?
No, white people too.
Too, in the mental.
Yeah, but the white people, you see, many of them could get into our hospitals, but for the most part it was native people. But if it happened to be white people in that area that fell under the, you know, that let's say half-breeds and stuff, those kind of outcasts and stuff, it was so big, there's no saying. But that's what got me on this, the first and the what I consider one of the most important battles that I fought for that, and that was to correct that. And I had lots of help, Bob Bartlett, Governor Greening, and everyone, Dr. Albright, and the people, they were all for it. Mm-hmm. But because of that fluke of law that was on in Seattle, there was so much we couldn't do. But with the hospital building there, we finally did get them. We took over some more command away from the Indian service, and we began to let native girls come in there and to be in and at least bring water to them. And they could die in the comfort rather than being living on the ground in some poorly constructed native houses that they used to be. Mm-hmm. But those, see, I'll tell you something you can't believe. But I see, I'm about through with this. But I don't know whether I have the strength and the go with, because of age, my mind doesn't function right. But I would like to start a research on how much of this that the pregnant native people, that their babies ever got out of there.
Like an investigation of that, what you think is true.
Well, I think it is, and I like it. Nothing has been done, see, and mm-hmm. probably nothing will be done until someone becomes mm-hmm. excited on it. Now, I'm excited enough, but I don't think I'm capable of handling it anymore, because you may find out during this here to pray that if you, my mind is such, that is a pretty much one-track mind. If you ask and you got off on another thing, then I'd have to ask you, what were we back on? See? So if we've stayed with the mental health on this, and that is up to the point.
Mm-hmm. So that is your part in supporting statehood, seeing the
yes.
need to change the law because of the treatment
yes.
of
yes.
mentally.
And but there was a lot more now. The very building in here is Alma Rasmussen's. But Alma Rasmussen was a good banker. And the war was on, and housing was scarce here. Now, as a banker, he came in there, and with the Office of Territories, we were friendly and knew the ropes and stuff, but he was in there. And we got Congress to amend laws, and when new laws came in, but what he wanted corrected was there was the Banking Act, in which a bank has used up its funds could turn those notes over in and have them restored. In other words, the building and the banks had their money, and as far as it came, when they were used up for the proper things, for housing and a thing like that, Congress would provide the money and buy those notes from it so that they could go. And got that enacted, and of course after that the American banks could start to loan money and do it, but they were really restricted.
This was prior to statehood?
Was that?
This is prior to
statehood? Yeah, prior to statehood.
So
but we got some laws amended. In fact, we got quite a few laws amended before the before statehood, because knowing the fact and getting to Congress that what had been overlooked through the years, a law would be passed, and this covers the District of Columbia, all the 48 states of the District of Columbia. They didn't reach out Island of Secession and other things, territories.
And that would be Puerto Rico and...
Yeah, and Hawaii.
And of course, Alaska.
Yeah. So that is why on statehood, you see, and well, it was one of the things, of course, I was asked to take a job with the hopes of getting statehood, but also to handle some of these people, and because... We had Tony Diamond. I came right after Tony Diamond, but I knew Tony Diamond, and this wasn't Tony Diamond knew too, and Bob Bartlett. But Bob Bartlett was our delegate to Congress at that time, and the only person we had. But then the statehood thing came on through, and Greening was back here as a forceful governor who knew the weakness of it, and he could. He helped so much in correcting these things.
Well, he was your predecessor in that position as Director of Office of Territories. Hadn't he done that? And
no, it had gone by. Because it's the type of thing that I don't think ever reached the office of the Director of the Office of Territories seat. Mm-hmm. It was one of neglect of things. There were so many other political things, you see. So this man, he just ran rampant in handling this miserable thing, but it extended on, you know, it was after Greening that things began to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my... That part, my assistant was Will Godding, who was Alaska-born, and a native of born in Skagway. And, you know, he was sound in his thinking and everything, and he was my assistant. So we began to pick up this stuff whenever we went through the laws and got them in, and Congress amended them to include... This and new laws, and then it was also to include the territories and island possessions. Otherwise, it's only been the district, the 48 states, and the District of Columbia.
At that time, I guess the United States had some islands in the South Pacific too.
Oh you know, yeah, yeah.
Micronesia.
Yeah, well that's it. And my assistant, my assistant, Will Godding, was appointed High Commissioner, and I was ready to retire, but he wanted me, so he had been my assistant, but as High Commissioner out there. Then he wanted me, two or three things. He wanted me because he could trust me, and therefore, if I could go out to this island position that very few went to. They came out from here because they'd sooner meet with the headquarters and drink all night and leave and write a story about the trip. But many islands had never been visited by people from High Com, as they called it. The boat would go in periodically, you know, months apart, to pick up copra and bring them food and mail. But there was no radio, there was nothing, they were just out there. And when I would visit these places, And of course, having been in Alaska, knowing distance and so, and Will too, we knew the thing was to get out and see these people. And they were so gracious for someone coming from the territory of the United States, because they'd been under Japanese rule, and then the United States went to Congress, or the United Nations, and asked if they, the Interior Department, might not take the administration of the trust territory of the Pacific Island and help them develop their own self-government. And that is what we worked on, and I give the High Commissioner credit. During that period, they got in there and they elected their own people, they studied, and with the knowledge that we had and the opportunity to use it, we got the top think tank people in the nation to come out and look this over. So their constitution is better than our own. It was patterned after ours, and it's like our own constitution, except that those think tank people, a few words were changed, and so their constitution was right. And then it was to be elected and get together. But there again, American shipping and everything else, it was all to go to it. And of course, when they set up, it was turned over to the Navy, because they were the big ones and they had the surplus property and they had everything to get there. Mm-hmm. But the admirals, they wanted to be in Hawaii. They might go out there once in a while on a tour, you know, to report on it. But otherwise, the Navy had it, and, you know, it was so silly out there in the trust territory, too. It had been by the Red. And so the civilian group around there, they had it blocked off, and the natives or anyone had to go through the gate and stuff, you see. It was all
countries in their own country.
Yeah, no. It was so funny, you know, that the and their money was spent. See, they had PXs and good stuff, but they used up most of the money that should have been for the native people, because they didn't have much. And of course, the insulting thing, you know, here on their own people, they had to go through the gate.
Yeah, right, and say, so, be like strangers.
Yeah, no, it
country.
Was all silly, but yeah. We began to correct that, and it, I'd visit these villages, they know someone was coming from Haikop, mm-hmm. and I'd come in there, and they would be, have native children that would sing or something, and they'd come with the lays, you know. They're so grateful that we came in there, and they'd almost smother us. Of course, I had to interpret it, but they brought on everything. So, but they came on in there, and what they called their medical place, in almost all of the places, there were these metal objects built with that, and a little floor in it, heat and nothing else. And often I'd come, and the roof, the floors were so bad with termites that you had to watch they didn't break. And the bed that they had in there, because nothing was done, the human sweat and stuff would go till it was black with the, you know, with the accumulation of blood and sweat together. There's no changing of linen or anything else. And then when you get in, what should be the money supply, you were lucky if there were ever even be aspirin in there.
Yeah, I guess so. The territories, Alaska certainly felt this way, was the stepchild of the United States, that they did not get equal treatment. And I suppose, they wanted, of course, democratic representation by having a vote. That, in my reading, was certainly an issue. But I guess economically, the state really had a lot to gain by statehood.
Oh, they get, look at us here.
Yeah.
We headed, you see, now I was out there with this job, and the things began to turn, you see, and like Elmer Rasmussen came on in, and we, our banks began to do business, and we began to take use our right as we should. And two things that you got out of this, when they were going to build these two big air bases, they wanted to extend them out from our local one here out, and we'd have to go also. They would have the long runways, and this was one of both Anchorage and Fairbanks. No, this is Alaska's and the city's own, so that we saved this airport, we saved the others, and they went on out, and when they wanted a real big one, you know, and they couldn't get it here in the Tanana Valley because we wouldn't let them ride over town. So they went way out to the Alsen place where the Alsen airport, you see.
You have to listen to Sunni.
Yeah, well, they went out and they built, and this was the thing, the airports that they built out there was that they could handle the length of piss. I've been on army planes riding it on my own, you know, could get on and go places with them. But sometimes those officers, when they went over that or come near it, they circled till they'd never seen as long airstrips as they had out of Dyson. It was all nice, and how this thing worked out, too, you see. In there as chief of the Alaska branch, then this was my responsibility, and of course I had Governor Greening was there, and Bob Bartlett was that was the key person in there, but he had the governor, which was a knowledgeable person, and worked on and got in there. Mm-hmm. But with Will Godding, we began to get these things. Now, here's how funny some of these things would be. Now, it gets a little off, but it hits the point. I was going in to the interior to see General Buckner. But at White Horse, I was flagged down, the Army plane that was flagged down, and I was asked by that general there, if I would go to Edmonton, they had a colonel that the general couldn't control, and I should go in there because that's the War Manpower Commission. So I had to get, and by that time, you see, they were, this is on the way to state, you see, they were building the Alaska Highway. And the Alaska Highway came into being because as they were bringing the airplanes, the fighting ships that were manufactured in there, they had to come into Fairbanks, and the Russians would get them.